The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. From hot dogs to cool kitties, this is Dark Side of the Pooch.
Here we go, kitty poos. It's time for Dark Side of the Pooch. He's Dr. Rav Stewart from the Rossbridge Animal Hospital at Rossbridge Vet on Twitter, Rossbridge Animal Hospital on, of course, on Facebook. The number is 205-208-0301. Dr. Rav, how are you, sir? You doing okay?
I'm doing fantastic, man. I'm so glad to be back. We had to take it like a week off or so because I was...
You're allowed.
So much going on.
You're allowed to do that, man. We have a monster show for you today. Of course, always brought to you by Ed's Pet World down there in beautiful Homewood. We started this show, I guess it was 47 years in business, so it's probably kicking near 50. They've got all kinds of great exotic pets. I've mentioned tarantulas and all kinds of cool fish and cockatoos and ferrets and chinchillas and some sugar gliders. They got it all. Plus, Seth's Toy Closet is about ready to expand. We'll have some exciting news about that. It's about 50-50 down there. So unmarked toys, unopened toys, unboxed stuff, buy, sell, and trade. Check out Seth's Toy Closet. And, of course, Ed's Pet World. It's been a staple here in beautiful Birmingham for nearly 50 years down there in beautiful Homewood. Today, Hawks. Owls and Eagles, oh my. Got a special ask from PETA. Does telemedicine work for your little pooches? And could that unmarked package that came in the mail, could it be for your little dog? I'm talking little blue pills. We'll talk about it here on the big show. Let's get right into it, though. A story, I don't know if you saw the story out of Arkansas last week. Woman hears her beagle out in the backyard yelping, making all kinds of ruckus. She looks out, and there is a red-tailed hawk pecking its eyeballs out. It's attacking her beagle. And there was an interesting article about how hawks, eagles, and owls, of course, are getting bolder because obviously we're moving into their areas, and so they have nowhere to go. And because of the Migratory Bird Treaty Act of 1980, or 1918, should I say, where if you kill one of these birds, you get 6 months in prison and $15,000. The question is, how afraid should we be if you live in a wooded area of eagles, owls, or birds of prey preying on your pooch?
Birds of prey are scary.
Yeah, I know,
I mean,
right?
They are. They can take you out. There was a, do you remember... HBO did a show on this. It was called The Staircase.
Yes.
So I didn't watch it, but I think my wife watched it. She gave me the breakdown, and there was some like thing after the fact, I guess, like after the case had been settled, where one of the attorneys came back and said, "Hey, we think a bird of prey or an owl killed this woman."
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know, right?
So, I mean, I don't know if that's true or not, but I know some of the evidence lined up. But, these birds they can be aggressive, and they are really powerful. So, you hear stories all the time about little dogs in the backyard and, you know, a hawk picking up a chihuahua and stuff like that. Mm. I mean, a beagle, that's a pretty sizable dog.
I know, right?
Yeah. So I mean... I think that it is something to be concerned about, especially if you have a smaller dog. But apparently now you need to be concerned if you have even, you know, a little bit larger of a dog.
Well, by the way, they say the birds of prey can pick up anywhere between half and three quarters of its body weight. So you're talking probably a pound to 2 pounds, maybe 3 pounds max. But, you know, if birds just realize, you know, I always say this, you know, if we get in the backyard and there's like 16 deer, if those 16 deer actually realized that they could take me in a heartbeat, just like squirrels, you walk on your back porch and there's like 15 squirrels, they could take me down in a heartbeat. If they all ran after me, I'd run like a little school, you know, schoolgirl. But it's amazing.
Especially if they're all hopped up on cocaine, oh. Like cocaine bear. What about cocaine squirrel?
I know, cocaine bear, right? So if eagles and owls and birds of prey were smart enough to know they could just go down there and start just pecking on things. And we've certainly seen that. You know, you ever been near a bird nest and how birds dive?
Oh, yeah.
We've seen videos of birds diving on people and pecking on people's heads and stuff to protect their babies. So that's certainly something to take. Yeah, and I live in a wooded area and we have birds and they make all kinds. Dr. Josh talks about he lives like, I mean, he could do some documentary in his backyard with the death and carnage that red-tailed hawks perform every single day. So it is something, but they're basically saying, yeah, be careful, man. If you've got a lot of birds of prey around your backyard and you have a small animal, you may want to keep an eye on it. They can get after it. We have some great emails here. info@tonycurryradio.net, info@tonycurryradio.net. We call it mutt mail. We'll get into it in a second. PETA is back in the news. They have written to the insurance group, a direct line, mounting evidence that brachiocephalic dogs suffer from painful and even fatal health conditions. They're saying since 2000, ownership of flat-faced dogs have skyrocketed 601% because a lot of bulldogs and other flat-faced dogs are being used in advertising. And, of course, people see dogs in advertising, and they think they're cute, and they want to buy them. Can you tell me what kind of dangerous flat-faced dogs are? And I know that we've talked extensively about their breathing issues, that it's probably not a good idea to take one on an airplane. But can you talk about flat-faced dogs?
So let me understand. PETA is saying that they're a danger to themselves, like they have a lot of problems, or they're dangerous to us?
They don't want people to own them because they think that obviously ownership has gone up and people are looking for more flat-faced dogs, and they don't want these dogs to be used in any type of advertising or movie roles.
Oh, I mean, I don't see why
they don't have a problem with flat-faced dogs. They just don't want more people owning them because they don't feel like people know enough about them to take care of them.
Yeah, I mean, they're not hard to take care of. Yeah. So I would disagree with that. You want to keep them from getting overheated,
yeah, okay.
And because they don't, you know, they do have trouble breathing because of their small nasal passages, and then they also the anatomy of the back of their throat, they have some obstructive airway issues just naturally,
mm-hmm.
And some dogs are. It will even vary in the breed. You know, you could have one English bulldog that doesn't suffer from it at all.
Yeah.
And you have another one that, you know, has, you know, terrible problem with it. So one way that a dog cools itself is by panting. So if they have a respiratory issue, like if they have the trouble aerating, then they're not going to be able to cool themselves. So you want to be really cautious with those dogs getting overheated. And, you know, that's probably why you see Ugga, he's sitting on bags of ice.
Yes.
In his little doghouse, and his doghouse is literally air conditioned.
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't want that dog to get overheated.
Come
so
to think of it, I've never seen anybody walk in a bulldog. Come to think of it. Yeah, I've never seen that. Go ahead, continue.
So, you know, there's nothing wrong with owning a brachycephalic breed. And there's some breeds that are in this category that you may not even realize, like Cavalier King Charles Spaniels.
Mm.
I mean, they're considered brachycephalic. So there's kind of a range. You know, pugs and bulldogs are the most common. French bulldogs, you know, English bulldogs, mastiffs, stuff like that. But there's nothing wrong with owning these dogs as long as you just, you know, they need to take it easy. If it's hot, you know, they need to stay inside.
All right, so if you have a nose like mine, and it's like an airplane engine, I mean, I can intake all kinds of things. I need bed sheets to blow my nose during allergy season. Steve in Birmingham, info@tonycurryradio.net, wants to know, it is allergy season. The stuff is, I mean, I think the tree pollen is like at the highest it could possibly be when we record the show here on March 6th. Do dogs suffer from allergies? And if they do, how do we know and how do we treat them?
Well, you and I have Dotson noses. We are... I've made fun of your nose from time to time, but it's only because I share in the
you do not the have a, size. You do not have a big nose, brother. You
I do.
Have you seen my nose? And you know, and you know, your nose and your ears are the only two things on your body that will continue to grow till you die. You realize that, right?
Hey, why couldn't we as men have another part of our body?
I know, right? I know. The bigger the nose, the longer you know what I'm talking about.
The bigger the nose, the bigger the boogers.
There you go. You have it.
So dogs get allergies, but it's usually a contact allergy from pollen. It's not an inhaled allergy like we have.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't, they can have inhaled allergens, but it's when a dog has allergies, it's usually a skin allergy because they're exposed to a pollen or a plant material that they're allergic to, and it makes their skin itchy, and then they will lick and chew on their skin. And that does two things. It breaks down the microscopic barrier of the skin, and it leaves moisture, which creates a good habitat for bacteria to grow and yeast to grow. And so since you have removed that microscopic barrier on the skin, it leads to a lot of secondary bacterial and fungal cultures of the skin. They can also get allergic conjunctivitis, and so that's something that humans do struggle with a lot, itchy eyes during allergy season. And that's usually treated with an eye drop, just like it is with people. But when they have skin allergies, you can treat them similarly to when we have respiratory allergies. You can treat them with antihistamines like Benadryl and Zyrtec. But sometimes they need stronger prescription medications to help interrupt the little messenger that tells the body that it's itchy. And those are called cytokine inhibitors. You can also use the tried and true steroids. But these medications we're talking about, they just treat the symptoms. They're not going to fix the problem. And really, the only way to fix an allergy is to not be exposed to what you're allergic to, or you can do something called immunotherapy, and that requires an allergy test. And the allergy test tells us what the pet is being exposed to at a high level. It doesn't necessarily tell us they're allergic to that. It just tells us here is a list of things they are being exposed to. And if they have symptoms of allergies, it stands to reason that they are allergic to some of these things we're being exposed to. And then you can create immunotherapy to help the dog be cured of their allergies. They're injections that you give at a certain frequency, like a certain you give it really initially you give it a lot, and then you space out the injections, and hopefully the dog can eventually get over it.
That is every answer you needed right here. That's a great answer. And I will add this because only because I've experienced this, but if your dog is an outdoor dog a lot and you're out in the tree pollen stuff, that dog will bring those pollens into the house. And I think a lot of people suffer from seasonal allergies and they're taking their medicine. They're wondering why they're just so doggone congested. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that if you have a long-haired pet, a lot of that pollen is on your animal. So wash your dogs, maybe spray them off before they come in. That could be very helpful, correct?
Yes, that's a good point because I'm not allergic to dogs and cats, but I am allergic to the things that they bring on their skin
Yes.
into the building.
Yes. Info@TonyCurryRadio.net. Info@TonyCurryRadio.net. He's Dr. Rab Stewart from the Rossbridge Animal Hospital. The number is 205-208-0301 at Rossbridge Vet on Twitter. Susan in Sheboygan, our first email from Sheboygan, said her mother just went into a brand new nursing home and they allow pets and they want to get her a little lap dog to keep her company. She wants to know what type of breed, how old should that animal be, and where should she find it?
Well, we mentioned Cavaliers earlier, and those dogs are just awesome. I've never met a mean one. They're very low maintenance. They don't really need a lot of space to run and play. They're great companions, and you can get one as a puppy, or you can get one that's an adult from maybe a rescue group. There's a great Cavalier rescue group here in Birmingham. But I know that she's in Sheboygan, so that may not help. But Cavaliers are great dogs.
And what age should we be looking at? Because I think we all get to a point where, puppies are wonderful and we've done the whole, 7 years to 1 year kind of thing, but it's not really every 7 years. And then when your dog gets to be about 9 or 10, for us older folks, it's awesome because they don't want to go walking every single day and they end up chilling out just a little bit, when you come home. What age are we looking at here?
It's depends on the dog because if you're going to get an adult dog, you need to do your homework and be sure that it, didn't wind up at a rescue because of behavioral problems. So, a lot of dogs that wind up at a rescue are there because they were hard to manage. So I think an adult dog in this situation might be the way to go because you don't have to go through the puppy stages. Which can be very intensive as far as training and getting it to be housebroken and that sort of thing. So But you just got to be sure that the pet wasn't having behavioral issues. And most rescue groups will be upfront with you about that.
Yeah, you know, you could be of good service and community service as well if you have a couple animals and they're well kept and they're well behaved. A lot of nursing homes in and around the Birmingham area actually allow you to bring pets in. And I visit out to Danbury every Friday, and I take my two pooches out there, and people know that I come around 4:30, 5 o'clock, and they come down in the veranda area, and they actually get to pet the dogs for a half an hour, 45 minutes. They don't have to worry about taking care of it and cleaning up after it. So if you'll call your local nursing home and say, hey, listen, can I bring my dog back by to have it pet or whatever for a little while, they really appreciate it. This is Dark Side of the Pooch. He's Dr. Rab Stewart at the Rossbridge Animal Hospital. Show that airs at least 5 days a week on the TKR app. Thanks to the thousands and thousands of folks who have downloaded our app. And, of course, you can get it available on any major indice when it comes to a podcast, a Tony Curry Radio podcast. It's Curry with a K, K-U-R-R-E, Tony Curry Radio Podcast or TKR, and listen to them. And we take your emails, info@TonyCurryRadio.net, info@TonyCurryRadio.net. Tom in Centerpoint says he has a four-year-old assignment. Siamese cat, and has noticed the litter box hasn't been touched in about 5 days. He's done some Google searches and maybe thinks that his cat has kidney stones. If your cat's not using the litter box, maybe it's half in, half out. Is there any concern there?
First, you want to be sure that the cat is not using, well, I'm maybe making an assumption that the cat is using the bathroom, but it's just not using the litter box.
Yeah.
For its bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's the case, that can be behavioral. And the first thing that we tell owners is, you know, be sure that your box is in an accessible location. Be sure that you have enough litter boxes. You're supposed to have one per cat plus one. So if you have one cat, you're supposed to have two boxes.
What's the plus one do?
The plus one just makes it accessible.
Yeah.
You know, just makes it accessible. So, you know, be sure that you haven't changed litter recently, because some cats get to where they like one type of litter. Don't change it up on them. And you want to be sure that you're scooping the litter box daily and completely emptying it and cleaning it out with soap and water weekly.
Okay.
So if you're doing all of those things and you still have a problem with the cat using the bathroom in other places other than the litter box, that's when you want to take it to a vet and be sure that they don't have a medical issue. And then if you've ruled out all the medical issues, then it's probably a behavioral issue. And then you have to kind of work through that.
And by the way, I've gotten a couple of emails over the last couple of weeks. I was going through all of our emails over the last 7 days, and several people have said the robotic litter box is a no-go. That if you have a cat that's kind of stuck in its ways, it will not... I can just imagine. They finally get the electronic robot litter box. You're like, finally, I don't have to empty this thing anymore. And the cats won't get in it. They're like, I'm not getting in there, because if they're used to the one on the ground or it's making a weird noise, they won't get into it. Any thoughts?
So, yeah, the noise thing.
Yeah.
I've heard people say that it freaks the cat out and then the cat won't use it and they start peeing in the house.
Yes.
And once that happens, it can be really hard to break them of that.
Yeah, I know. And I've had some cats go in my shoes too. It's not a pretty picture. This is Dark Side of the Pooch. It's a great show with a wonderful veterinarian. He's Dr. Rab Stewart from the Rossbridge Animal Hospital at Rossbridge Vet on Twitter and the Rossbridge Animal Hospital. On Facebook, brought to you by Ed's Pet World down there, 979-1331. They're fantastic. Exotic pets and, of course, a Seth's Toy Closet. About ready to expand. Some details coming up on that. Alice in Inverness says, I'm tired of seeing Viagra commercials. I was wondering where this email was going to go. She's like, every time I turn around, she goes, how many impotent men are out there? And then she said, but do our pets ever get impotent? Do our dogs suffer from ED? If they do, how do we know? Is it important if they are impotent that we make sure they're not? And how do we treat it?
I don't think it's important for me.
I would hope not.
Well, you know, I don't think impotent dogs are not something that I worry about.
Yeah, that's a good
because
thing.
Most of the dogs that we see are neutered. Mm-hmm. We don't just, and it's a demographic thing. We don't see many intact dogs because we don't have a lot of breeders where we are.
Yeah.
So we're not going to struggle with ED in dogs. That is definitely not something we spend a lot of time learning about in vet school.
Mm-hmm.
That is more of a, you know, that's a really specific reproductive question that a, so the people that are board certified in reproductive medicine. So those are people that finished vet school and then they did a residency in reproductive work. Mm-hmm. So they're called theriogenologists.
Oh, I love when you use that
and theriogenologist. And it's, those are probably more common in large animal and food animal medicine. Because, you know, it's, if you think about horses, there are some really high dollar horses, cost a lot of money. You know, we're talking Kentucky Derby, Thoroughbreds, but also in the Western, you know, Western world, like cutting horses, you know, these horses are very, very expensive and, people want certain bloodlines in their horses. So there are specialized people that can get horses bred that otherwise may not be able to breed naturally. And they can also collect semen from stallions and implant that into females, you know, with all kinds of just really interesting and complicated artificial insemination techniques. Mm-hmm. And the same goes for food animal, for cows. So dogs and cats, you know, they are our companions. But there are some dogs and cats that are worth a lot of money. And so they're intact and they can get a lot of money for their puppies and kittens.
Yeah.
So there are theriogenologists for dogs and cats, but it's just not as common in the food animal industry. But I don't see any erectile issues with dogs because we don't, you know, that's just not something we see a lot of. We don't see a lot of intact pets.
If you gave your dog a Viagra, what would happen?
So we give dogs Viagra fairly commonly.
Really?
We do. But it is for a condition that Viagra was actually made for in people, and it's pulmonary hypertension. Viagra, the reason that Viagra became an erectile medication is because it was originally developed for pulmonary hypertension, okay? And that's increased blood pressure in your circulatory tract that gives blood to your respiratory system.
Oh.
Okay, so that's what pulmonary hypertension is. So Viagra was developed to fight this, and what they found out is that it gave an erection to all the dudes that took it.
Yeah.
So then they realized they had a bigger market for this than they originally thought.
Yes.
So we give dogs with pulmonary hypertension sildenafil, which is generic Viagra.
How about that? I've learned so much today. I didn't realize that. That makes a lot of sense. That's kind of like the guy with the peanut butter and the girl with the chocolate. They ran into each other, and little did they know they turned into a brand new little pill. And it's changed the world, man. It really has. Finally, and we want to get into some spring cleaning for pets. We have a few minutes here left, but I wanted to ask you, and you, we've talked extensively, and I know that you have a super successful business. You have a lot of clientele, great clientele. Your customers, they look after their pets hand over fist. They do wonderful stuff, but there's been a lot of talk about telemedicine, not only for humans, but now perhaps for pets. Do you know anything about the telemedicine business for veterinarian causes? And I would assume that I would like to go see a doctor because I feel like they have to see me in person. They have to put their hands on me and feel whatever lumps I have, whatever it is. And I would think it'd be the same thing with your pets, but does pet telemedicine work?
Well, I'll give you a real world answer.
Okay.
I'll give you, you know, with experience. Yeah. So when COVID happened, we had a telemedicine platform for our clients.
Mm-hmm.
Because they couldn't get in because they had COVID or they had been exposed to COVID or whatever. So we did some telehealth appointments. And the problem with dogs and cats and other pets and telemedicine is that they cannot verbalize how they are feeling.
Yes.
The owners, some owners have a lot of information and knowledge about their pets and others don't. You know, they may not be as observant, but I mean, a lot of veterinarians are going towards a telemedicine platform and they, you know, will keep it regardless of the, you know, COVID situation. Just me personally, I do not feel like it is helpful in pets.
Okay.
And I'll be honest with you. I think it's a very limited efficacy in people.
Ah.
But at least with people, you can talk about what your symptoms are. You can verbalize it and
Yep.
give them some direction to go in. But I'll also say this, I have had doctors tell me, good friends that are doctors, that in some ways they wish that the person would not say one word to them. Because sometimes the people they don't even understand their symptoms. I've had doctors say,
Yeah.
look, I wish my patient wouldn't say a word. Just let me do my physical exam and I'll tell you what I find.
There you go.
So that goes back to the physical exam and how important it is. And you cannot do that through telemedicine.
All right, that's an excellent answer. Dark Side of the Pooch, you can hear it 5 days a week on the TKR app or Tony Curry Radio on Android and wherever you get your podcast. Search the Dark Side of the Pooch. You'll find it. A picture of our blue healers on there. It's great. 208-0301, area code 205, Rossbridge Animal Hospital's Dr. Rab Stewart. All right, so when we do this show, it's going to 80. It appears spring's right around the corner, and I saw an interesting article on spring cleaning for our pets. I just wanted to go through a couple things and you can expound on these if you like. It says, watch the coat of your pet. I'm not sure what that means. You could talk about that. We talked about seasonal allergies. It also says something I think it's really important. Ease your pets back into exercise. Don't start walking them 5 days a week if you've never walked them before because it's been cold as Hades or whatever up in Chicago. And also the flu and tick season, or the flu and tick. Well, the flu and tick, but the flea and tick season as well. Can you expound on any of those?
The interesting thing about exercising them is if you will take them on short walks as it gets hot, then it will really help get them in shape for when it gets hotter. So dogs are they are more immune to heat if you will just slowly introduce them to it. On short walks, do that for a couple of weeks, and you can make the walks a little bit longer. And you just get them to a point where they acclimate, and they will acclimate seasonally. It's not something that you have to do. It's not like, well, I've acclimated you for the day, so you're good.
Yeah.
You do it over the course of a couple of weeks. So that's a cool thing, and it's nice that the article mentioned that. The coat, I'm guessing maybe. That I'm not really sure why they mention that, but I don't know if it has something to do with the coat drying out or being, overly moisturized. I'm not really sure what they mean by that. But the allergy stuff, yeah, we talked about kind of in detail.
And again, we talked about fleas and ticks. Ticks certainly more so in the summertime because they're coming out of the ground, but the fleas pretty much year-round kind of thing. So make sure that
Fleas and ticks, yeah, fleas and ticks year round in Alabama,
yeah,
year round.
no
Because
doubt.
it doesn't get cold enough for those to die off.
Something else too, and I think it's a little interesting, and I just learned this today, as a matter of fact. But I've been taking my dogs in the car with me almost everywhere I go, as long as I'm not in there for like 2 or 3 hours. But if I'm stopping and I'm running to the store, I'm running some errands or whatever, and I'm going to see them every 15 or 20 minutes, I've been taking them with me, and they love the ride, right? And I know they're not going to chew my shoes when I'm gone. But now that it is getting a little warmer, I had my pets in the car this morning, and I thought, and someone came in and said, "Hey, someone's got some dogs out in the car. It's 75 degrees outside." I was like, "Oh, I didn't even think about that." So as it gets a little warmer, make sure you keep your pets at home and make sure they're nice and cool and they're good to go. So great stuff, my man. Brought to you by, of course, our fine friends at Ed's Pet World down there, 979-1331. Exotic pets. They've got any type of exotic pet you want, from Cayman alligators to birds, chinchillas, tarantulas, all kinds of great fish. I get all my fish down there. And of course, Seth's Toy Closet is about ready to just blow up. He does all kinds of unboxed, unused, unopened toys from the 70s, the 80s. He's got Legos. He's got all kinds of great stuff down there. It is a perfect place for the kids. Go down there and check out all of his toys and, of course, all of his exotic pets at Ed's Pet World at 979-1331. And, of course, so you can find Dark Side of Pooches, Dr. Rab Stewart, the Rossbridge Animal Hospital, 205-208-0301, 208-0301 at Rossbridge Vet on Twitter and the Rossbridge Animal Hospital, of course, on Facebook. As always, my friend, thank you so much. You're the man.
Thanks, buddy. Talk to you next time.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.